This is the Reflector Reflections podcast. My name is Annie. Join me as we sample around the world the amazing humans that exist in the land of human design, gene keys, astrology, metaphysics, all the things. In this series, we are showcasing guests in the human design community and bringing recognition to them in the work that they do in the human design space and get to know them a little better in how they experiment and navigate their unique design. Today's beautiful conversation is with Vanessa Henry. Vanessa is a 6-2 ego manifester with the left angle cross of healing. Vanessa, for those that haven't had the privilege of encountering her, produces human design edutainment. Fun stuff. It's a playful reference tool, and she places emphasis on wellness and spaciousness in human design. What I love most about Vanessa is she is really recognized for her perspective on variables and environmental energetics in her wellness club. Thank you for taking time to chat with me, gorgeous soul. Welcome.
What an introduction. Wow. I'm sitting here like, you make me sound like luxurious. And I was just here kind of drinking that in. I was like, oh my gosh. Wow. Thank you, Reflector.
Giving you all the juice.
Oh yeah. Thanks for having me on. What are we getting into today?
Well, I want to talk about you first and foremost, because one thing I found in this space is sometimes people don't know who we really are, especially online. And you, I absolutely adore your YouTube channel because it's like I already know you. But thanks. I want to take it back and I want to ask you, how did human design find you, or you find human design? Let's go back to 2013.
I don't have a very glamorous story here other than I had just started living on my own for the very first time. I was working as a finance specialist. I was specializing in building millennial wealth. So I had a young clientele. I was making good money. I finally lived on my own. I had lived like with roommates and stuff. And one of my favorite things to do was to go to a bookstore, a local bookstore called McNally Robinson, and just kind of walk through the wellness section and just let any kind of texts jump out at me, because I found my life at that time was really analytical. You know, I'm dealing with numbers, I'm dealing with tragedy in people's lives and helping them set up secure ways of living to take care of themselves. And so the wellness section in the bookstore was kind of like a salve, you know? And I came across this book that said Human Design. It was a red book, and it was by Karen Curry Parker. And there's no reason that I would have picked this book up other than it had said, the tagline on this book was something along the lines of like the new astrology, the new science of astrology or something. And at that time, I was an astrologer writing for little coffee shop news type things, like writing horoscopes. I had been, I was a journalist by trade. And so I often had little side gigs writing things and writing around. And I had been writing for Cameron Diaz's Our Body book. She had sort of a online wellness community, and I was one of the columnists there. And so I was kind of getting introduced to more people in this field. And then lo and behold, I just randomly get this book, and it says the words human and design on it. And those are just, if you would know me on a personal level, those are just two buzzwords that you could see. Oh, she would pick that up because it's got the astrology in there and it's got the design component. I had came from an arts background in design and journalism. And I took the book home, and I remember reading it cover to cover in my apartment. And I remember discovering I was an ego manifester, and I immediately felt a little bit of shame, like, oh boy, like that word ego can be so activating for people. And, you know, it's so funny. I often think about, you know, had that said heart-led manifester, how would that have shifted the way I feel about it? Anyway, I read this book. I have some feelings and thoughts about it. I'm in my 20s. And I goes onto my bookshelf with all my other kind of books like this. And I start dating who's my now husband. And my life kind of really does take some changes at that point. But I'm really not actively experimenting. I'm not in the human design culture. I'm not immersed in it online. I remember trying to go and get my own software, and everything was I was on Mac computers because I was in the design world and everything was set up for like PCs. And so I purchased something and couldn't download the software and I was all annoyed and just buying things and making a mess. And it only circled back into my life a few years later, once I gave birth to my son. And when I gave birth to my son, I for sure, looking back, had a nervous breakdown and had some unsupported postpartum experiences. And it sort of came back in my field. And it was the time that I actually got into it, actually discovered the Jovian Archive and the International Human Design School and Ra Uruhu. To be honest, he was not really in my awareness before then. I really was introduced from Karen Curry Parker's book, although I don't really follow. She's a voice in the field. And I kind of did go more raw. Like, you know, I did kind of start learning more specifically from Ra at that point. But that's when experimenting started, when I became a parent.
Yeah. The cracking open of self. Doesn't parenthood do that to us?
Yes.
I just want to honor that beautiful word of heart-led. I'm changing my language. That's one thing that I have really appreciated about just studying under you, I suppose, is changing our narrative of, you know, just, no, it's this. I love that. So heart-led.
Yeah.
I'm stealing that. Thank you. Because it's just so true.
I have a taste cognition in my design, and the further I get in my studies, the more I learn how much language can really disarm the other, especially on the tongue of a manifestor. And so I like to take that seriously and playfully at the same time. So as I'm speaking and I hear myself kind of blubber or misstep or say something that sounds too harsh for me, I will correct myself on the spot and just kind of ask for some grace. And people have started to notice that I do that. And it's kind of made me a little bit embarrassed about it, but I'm very sensitive to how something will sound. Mm-hmm. And so if it sounds off to me, I just like to make an example of myself in the moment and be like, you know what? That's actually not what I meant. I misspoke. Sometimes I speak quickly and my tongue gets away on me. So yeah, I do like to really reclaim narratives.
Yeah. And conversations I've had with manifestors with me in my energy, I always feel really home with them. I've never felt any, I don't think I've ever had a manifestor that's pushed against me that have just felt off. But one thing that I have heard from a lot of manifestors is, again, speaking into language of closed and repelling aura, you know, all of that. When you found this, can we talk about how that language felt for you, or you were pretty cool with it?
I'd love to talk about that. I think for myself and most manifestors I come into contact with, we are really, really put off by that language. You have to understand that these are often a collection of people who have been at times violently abused by their reality. And then they're sort of met with this information that's like, you're repelling people. And the word repelling makes us feel like people are not going to embrace us, which all we want is to be received. And then here's this information saying, yep, you're actually, no one's going to receive you. You know, that's how it feels. And then you get a little bit further in the study and people are like, well, that's how your aura is. Get over it. And I just find that to be lacking in compassion, because these are people who often have people-pleasing tendencies because they've had to learn how to survive in a reality not set up for them. And I have kind of witnessed now through my deconditioning experience how people don't like when you alter language in human design. I definitely, in the early days of my study, used to be someone who altered all kinds of language because I was really trying to connect with the people on the other side. But as I kind of continued down that path, what I learned was it was contributing to spreading misinformation, because the words used in human design often sound like they belong in other studies, like color and tone in the variable study, you know, doesn't sound like it belongs there, if that makes sense. Yeah. But when we use language like repelling and closed aura, I find a lot of manifestors shut down. And we don't engage with the material as playfully as we could. And actually, my contribution to spreading, like, let's say, misinformation about the study by wanting to kind of change language and stuff. So when you are learning human design, we present it as a system. And I really feel it's a language that we can kind of learn and pick up. So if I'm wanting to speak the language with someone, I wouldn't change the words because I'm not then speaking the language. If I, you know, I'm planted on an indigenous territory where I live, and if I wanted to learn the language of the people, I wouldn't start manipulating the language to try to connect with them, right? And when I thought of it that way, it did bring perspective, and I did get a little bit more strict with the language that I use, but I got a little bit more colorful with the stories and examples to explain that language and those concepts. And I think I kind of found my way once I did that. But when it comes to describing the manifestor aura as repelling, it is something that we struggle with, I think, because when you understand the psychology of a manifestor, it's really too bad that was the language that was chosen, because it creates a little barrier that slows down our learning or perhaps turns us away from the study entirely. And ultimately, I think manifestors can really benefit from it, obviously, because we learn we're non-sacral. And then that can really change everything. And then we can begin kind of contending with our anger and whatnot. But we usually resonate because we hear, oh yeah, you're really angry. And a lot of us are, you know, so we're like, okay, I feel seen. But then when we learn we're repelling, we, I think, interpret that as being off-putting. And the manifestor really does just want to be received by the other. We want to have an impact. We want to have an effect. We want to make an imprint on them because we want to feel alive. We want to be humanized rather than villainized. And sometimes language can be a barrier to that. So even though it's the very thing that connects us in this kind of study, it can be the thing that divides us as well.
Yeah. Thank you for that, because that was just so beautifully explained. And for the reflector type, it's just like the manifestor sits on one end of this on the spectrum and the reflector's on the other. And I think even the language in the reflector space is very much like, well, it's Teflon aura and you're just reflecting and you're amplifying. And it's like, hang on a second. So I really appreciate that. It's like, it's
our experiment. I don't like to use the H word, but yeah. That Teflon aura comment, like, I really hate when people kind of, excuse me, wow, some hate coming out. I don't usually speak like that, but I dislike when we flippantly say things like that. Oh, you have this Teflon aura, get over it. And it's sure, it's okay for you to say that because you don't have that type of aura, or you don't understand the concept of the reflector. You know, there is this aspect in the culture of human design that people weaponize the language against one another. You'll see things like, oh, seven-centered being. It's like, okay, I'm not playing with all that. What are we doing here? That's gross. So I don't like when people, take some of these terms and turn them into like little digs. I just find that to be some ego energy, and I can get really sensitive to that. You know, if I feel a little chest that's a little too puffy, I just want to put that down a little bit. Can't help it. And even in my home, my relationship with my family, we're all ego beings. And if anybody gets a little too chesty and confident, one of us is taking the other down a notch, you know. If anyone's feeling a little too low, one of us is boosting the other up. We really like to have a healthy ego environment here.
And speaking about your family dynamic, I've got two questions here. But the first one, let's take us back to your upbringing prior to all of this. And I guess I've been privileged because you've shared your mum on your channel, which I love. But could you share with us your little Vanessa growing up? How was that for you in your household environments?
I remember having a very loving household. I was raised by emotional generators, and I also have a generator sister I was raised with. And up until, you know, age 11, really that young childhood, there was a couple little trauma things that happened, but very free. I definitely remember being called a tomboy and quite masculine. or androgynous was language used at the time. And I had a lot of male cousins who lived around me, and I loved to run around and play with them. And it was very jarring for me when, you know, they all had their tops off and I wasn't allowed to take my top off. Someone came out to give me a camisole. I didn't like that. And so that kind of set me on a little bit of a journey with identity. And at this time in my life, I identify as non-binary, although I recognize I'm in a female form. That's a huge part of my message, even in human design, because I find that human design gives us ways to understand how somebody might feel with their identity and perhaps not feel like they subscribe to typical gender norms. And for me, that began really little, when I was really little. And I did have a mom who was also very kind of explorative with her identity as well. And I remember wanting to be a little boy and really kind of annoyed that I wasn't, and very close with my dad. When I started to develop into my female form and get a body, I was treated very differently. And my body was always kind of a point of conversation in the spaces I was in. And that made me very uncomfortable as a second line. And so I was that kid who would wear like turtlenecks and hoodies because I just wanted to hide my body like a little baby hermit. Mm-hmm. And this kind of amplified at age 11 when my dad passed away. My dad passed away from skin cancer. He had a mole on his head and he has a totally open head center like you. And that was the first part. That was the storyline that kind of sent me really deep into human design, was my dad's cancer journey. A few years after my dad passed away, I too was diagnosed with cancer. Our cancers were completely unrelated. And yet here we are in this household, you know, two of us with who had cancer, one passed away, one lived. And I remember feeling so much guilt for getting sick because my mom had already just been through that. And heaven forbid I should make her life harder. Now here's this baby ego manifester plugging into the powerful emotional generator mom. So those two experiences together, by the time I was 18 and diagnosed with remission, had made me have pretty insatiable anger and pretty intense rage blackouts. And I was really going to have to figure out how to deal with that trauma. And as a sixth line, I now understand a lot of those traumas were going to become the teachings that I base my life on as I kind of go on the roof. Kind of growing up and figuring out how to manage this anger, I was really sent into a spiritual path pretty soon. When I was sick in the hospital, there had been people, healers, who had come and seen me. And I was exposed to things like Reiki. That was things that they offered in the hospital and stuff. And it kind of got me curious about wellness because my doctors had said, we don't know how this happened to you. It might be environmental. We don't know. Now, this is over 20 years ago. And we're going to give you some really intense treatment because you're a child and we treat children to prolong or to cure them, but adults we treat to prolong their life. So at least you're a child with cancer because now we can treat you better, you know, if there's such a compliment. I then meet my husband, we fall in love, I give birth to a son, and my heart nearly gives out with the birth of my son. And I have a pretty intense near-death experience in labor that we later found out just how serious it was and how close I was to death. Now, I was very familiar with coming close to death, so it was something that could give me a lot of empowerment as well. But after that experience of giving birth and splitting in two, I really felt I went on the roof and had that thing to watch outside of myself. And I was ultimately called on a shamanic path, where I just became very loud and public with my awareness studies, and I'm going to make a living and take care of myself and my family with my skills and trades as a designer and journalist and public student. And I will just let people learn with me in my kind of way. And at this point I had taught in universities for my skills, and I was already established in what my skill set was. And it was just now up to me to decide, well, what am I interested in? And what are the endless creative ways I might be able to be an entrepreneur and take care of myself with that? And I began in astrology and crystal healing, actually. And then once human design had come back into my life with my son, it kind of just took a hold on me. And I just got very focused on it and found my area, which was variable, which was the exploration of your depths and how your inner workings work. And the reason I was drawn to that area was because I had started tracking tumor development in the body graph. I had a high volume of cancer patients who would get readings from me because of my own story as a cancer survivor. And I started to notice really peculiar patterns in the way cancer spread through the form. And we have a lot of information in human design on like the centers and illnesses and what they correlate to. But I was really noticing that through our openness is often where tumor development spread. Now, I can understand that might sound different for a reflector because a reflector is totally undefined, but you're rare. I'm actually working with a reflector right now who has cancer, and it's definitely been an interesting journey for me to see what that looks like in the reflector form, you know? But that study began with my dad and looking at his chart and seeing the way his cancer spread and metastasized completely just through his open centers, and then continued into me. My tumor was in my open chest cavity, my G center. And once it metastasized to my defined heart, we found the cancer. And then I kind of went on this whole journey and started reading charts of all kinds of people with chronic illness, but also with cancer. And there were some undeniable things I was seeing that I just kind of started talking about. And then as you would hear about celebrities who would be diagnosed with chronic illness or cancers, I would pull up their chart and say, what do you see? Isn't this interesting? Look at this is where they're open and this is where the cancer is. And just started kind of pointing it out. And definitely I think that caught some people's attention. And the reason I'm invariable is because of the environment component to that. And how the environment, like my doctor said, might be what makes us sick. But we interpret environment as, you know, living near a power line or spraying pesticides. We don't consider that each other, people, can make us healthy or sick. Our surroundings and our home can make us sick or well. And ultimately, I wanted to understand that more, and it kind of set my path.
Yeah. Thank you. You just answered so many of my questions. Because
like we're going a long winding journey here, six-line conversation.
I'm like, wow, that is so great. And you know, one of the questions I really wanted to ask you was what led you to this work? Because we hear a lot, even myself, it's just like the information was really shit. I wanted to talk with reflectors because if we're so rare, then I'm gonna find them and find them. Yeah. I have. So thank you for sharing that. And that is, it makes even the work that you do more profound. Like it's literally, you know, poof, just gets me in the feels. And I'm very curious about the work that you are doing in this space with reflectors. I have personal opinions on that, going reflectors can actually use this openness in so many beautiful ways. And again, it's about language, getting told, oh, your openness is your amplification. It's where you absorb energy. It's where you take on conditioning. And I've kind of started to flip that switch and just go, no, it's actually the opposite. And feeling that into my body of going, uh-oh, all of my openness is, I want to air quote here, it's a bit wanky to say, but it's like a superpower.
Absolutely.
My completely open G center, to me, it was always like in a lot of, not everyone, but you know, the generic human design space is just like, oh, you're not going to know who you are. Yes, that's true. But how much love I can give. I come from just such a place of love because there's nothing there. And it's just changed the way I kind of view openness.
I once heard open centers have unlimited potential. And I just loved that because there is a little bit of fear sometimes when you see a totally open center, people go, oh, you know, and I definitely view an open center as it's going to mirror the environment. So for you, totally open head, totally open G, I'm suddenly very interested about your upbringing and what the faith, belief, spirituality, religion was, or what was the family like, what was the loving environment like? Yeah, because it's going to tell me a lot about what you might show. But when you also look at it from another perspective and you see it's totally open, it has access to the full spectrum. And it has the potential to be incredibly wise because the potential is unlimited. You know, there's so many access points. So I would agree with you that it's like a superpower. I would love to hear your perspective on the reflector culture in the human design space, because I don't claim to be a reflector. I do not claim to be an expert about reflectors. They are absolutely the ones that I know the least about because I have been in contact with them the least in my life just because they're rare. And so when I come into contact with a reflector, I treat them like a little bit of a celebrity. Like I'm like, hello. And I've come to learn from the reflector community that they are not treated that way by all people. And so I would love to hear from you about that treatment and what the culture is from the reflector perspective.
Well, there's a couple of camps, I believe. Let's you know, fifth line coming out here. I'll just tell it like it is. Very practical, Vanessa. There is a couple of camps. I think that when people find that they are a reflector, they read the generic information. Again, that's coming from where I was and going, this is bullshit. This doesn't make sense. This is not truth, or it's rehashed information. I think a lot of reflectors get on a little bit of a, again, the openness, and they identify. It's just like, you know, the whole chameleon, just air quoting that word again. So when they're reading about all this stuff, they're kind of taking it on as their own. Yeah. And I've found over all these years, we can read something, but you need to, discernment is the big thing. So you've got one camp of reflectors that are very, very much in the camp of read it, watch what's happening, take it on, sample it, try it out, be discerning, feel into your experiment and take your sweet ass time. Then you've got the other camp that's like very, nope, this is how it is. I am this, you are that. And they take no responsibility for anything because they're just reflecting everybody else's shit. And then a lot of other types in the influencer space will also go, all reflectors are not self. So the not self gets thrown around a lot. So there is a little bit of like positivity and negativity. Again, what
I find that to be so discouraging. I'm sorry, all reflectors are not self.
It can be. That is said a lot. You know, we're acting in a not self. And even, you know, Ra in his teaching sort of says a very, you know, it takes a long time for a reflector to wake up.
It can take anyone a long time to wake up. And it can take anyone to have an intensely life-changing moment that also wakes them up instantly. Yeah. You know, that's bullshit. And I'm sorry that you're told that and that you sometimes have to ingest that and that that is tossed around like that. That's that weaponization that I think is so unnecessary. And I could see how that would be really discouraging, you know? And I don't really stand for any type of discouraging behavior because I find it to be deeply disrespectful and unnecessary. So I can't speak for the whole space, but I'm going to. I'm sorry that we've made you feel that way.
Not everyone has. And I think the last couple of years has taught us that more and more people are those that, you know, I guess, again, another two camps here of those that kind of learnt this from source and have spent time in their own experiment because they're allowed to. And I think with COVID and when everyone got shut down, and that's when a lot more people found
the class of 2020. Yes, there was a huge uptake. I watched that group pretty acutely because they're now at about year three of their deconditioning process. And typically in year three of the deconditioning process, you reach that critical mass of study, and there can be a type of breakdown that happens. And it ultimately leads to next year when they go into their fourth year of study, they divide and they find their groups, they find their cliques, they, you know, they go on the mountain, so to speak, and they find their people. So there was a huge uptick in 2020 and the years that follow. But I do watch, they call themselves the class of 2020. I watch them pretty closely because they're a really interesting group to honestly learn energetics through just by simply observing their behavior. Yeah. And where they're at in their study, you know?
That's exactly it. So I guess more and more kind of like raise their hands and like, oh, hi. Because, you know, even though it's 1%, there's still a lot of people on the planet. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So yeah, this I feel is, you this on is that. A new one. And they're coming out quite this, especially this year. And it's interesting you say that about the third year, because I've watched this community just blow up. And
yeah,
a lot more people are coming out and just going, no, or, you know, I'm gonna start sharing stuff from me. I'm gonna open myself up to this. So, and it's
beautiful. This is happening in the reflector community.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to me, that, you know, would that not be a reflection then of the wider landscape? If we're seeing that in the reflector community, that what to me, what that shows us is the entire space of human design studiers are all somewhat then going to be feeling like, no, actually, let me choose me and kind of step into myself now. Because, you know, that ultimately, when I watch the reflector like that, I do feel like you have to take a step back for a moment and really look at what the reflector is showing you, if that makes sense. And I could see how sometimes then that makes the reflector not always feel seen, or can make them feel dehumanized, because you are having your own individual experience, but there's such a wizardry to you that you give us this additional opportunity to see it from a wider lens. So I don't ever want to miss that. So if you're saying the reflectors are doing this, it makes, to me, it's like the final summary of what's actually happening within the human design space.
Yeah. And we've been given like tools to arm us, such as yours, you know, and it's just like, oh, wow, this is, wow. We can really learn and take more of this information on from different samplings and kind of feel it more. And it's, yeah, as I said, it's a beautiful thing to watch. Some of it's a little bit like cringe. It's a bit, you know, lots of third line happening out there, just going messy, messy, messy. But
oh, yeah,
the messy, I love the messy. The message is going out there. And that's what really excites me. Young reflectors coming up and just going, hey, something ain't right here, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. Old reflectors coming in, 70, 80 year olds, it's just like, and they're like, what?
Yeah.
The fun time to be alive, Vanessa.
What are the trends and happenings then in the reflector space? What are the reflectors saying right now?
We are changing the narrative of what it means to be a reflector. I feel like,
you know, I love that. You know, yeah, I love that.
I think as a group, and even working together and apart, we're not just sitting back now and taking the information in and just going, well, this is how it is. We are taking the information in and we are really churning it up inside, playing with it, experimenting with it, and then going, this is how it is for me. Not for every reflector, but as a general consensus, this is the real reflector information that everybody needs to start paying attention to. And I think that's still going to take time, because a lot of people are still in that camp of, nope, Ra said this.
You know what, though? That is, when you look at the 7-year deconditioning process, that is just a phase of the 7-year process. So when you see people doing that, it's kind of, I can see how it on one hand might be discouraging or demoralizing or frustrating or disappointing, you know what I mean? But on the other side of things, it's a marker of movement, because you have to go through that intense state of binary thinking in order to expand beyond that state of binary thinking. So you can't escape it. And so you kind of watch the politics play out. It usually happens around someone's second year of study. And in that second year of study, they've been practicing, they know some things, they have a little handle on the system, but now they have to contend with good, bad, right, wrong, left, right, black, white, you know? And it can really create some inner struggle, venom on the tongue, separation of friendships. And then you see when it gets to that third year of study is when that all starts to break down, because, you know, you start to go your own ways, you break the bonds, you divide. And I don't actually think people stay in that really regimented time of the deconditioning process where it's like, I'm right, you're wrong. That information is right. That information is wrong. I do think that softens, because I think ultimately we make relationships with each other that prove that to be wrong. You know, we fall in love with the other, you know, we fall in love with someone that, you know, makes us break our rules. So even though that is there and those politics are there and that binary thinking is there, it's just a marker of time. And you will, like, when people get there, it's like, okay, now they're starting to fight. They're starting to bicker. They're going to, you know, they're standing up for what they believe in, or they're finding their community, which is such a big piece of the human design culture. You must find who you resonate with and get into it with them, because as you're doing this awareness study, not everybody in your waking life is able to go there with you. Yeah. And so it can be a very alienating process. And we are social creatures. So thank goodness we have access to things like Wi-Fi connections, and we can find people across the world who we weirdly vibe with and resonate with, because so much of the relationships do fall away. And so then that making of that intense bond where you can see each other differently and hold space for each other differently is ultimately, yeah, a really healing experience. Yeah. So let us not get deterred by some of the black and white politics that can happen in this space. It's just a marker of deconditioning, in my opinion.
Yeah, I love that. So true. You got to go through, you got to wade through the shit so that you can experience it. And it's just all about your own experience. I think we can get caught sometimes in the early phases of finding this where we go, I know everything. I've read all the books. First line.
I remember saying in my first year, like, do I have to really decondition for 7 years? That seems like a long time. Like, I know lots now. And you know, the irony is when you kind of get to the end of the process, you feel like you know nothing. You realize you know nothing. You want to go back to the beginning. You're a bit afraid, not afraid, but it's like, oh gosh, like I don't know anything. And so the whole cycle then starts over. You know, you have another 7 years of deconditioning something else and something else and something else. And it really is a lifelong unfolding. It's not a 7-year decondition process, but thank God they don't say that, because I would be so discouraged and intimidated if it was like, you can start now, but you'll never reach the end. This will be with you for the rest of your life. You know, it's like, I'll take 7 years. Thanks. Yeah.
It's just that constant, like, pulling away, you know, the old onion, that you know, analogy of just, it is, it's just constantly, just when you think that you're through something, you're like, oh, that's that moment of peace. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, it's not going to last long, because to grow, we have to have that friction, right? That's what you're saying there before. We've got to have this.
You know, there is this little narrative in sort of awareness or wellness spaces that I would like to take an opportunity to say I really vehemently disagree with. I see a lot of memes that's like, the spiritual path is so hard, or whatever. Like, you thought it was going to be this, and then you see this unicorn in the sky, but really it's this. And it's this person, like, bawling, disheveled, having this mess of their life. And everyone's like, yes, oh, that's so true. I don't really agree. That's not what my experience feels like. My experience before adventuring into awareness studies really felt like Earth was showing me it is a place of hell, and human beings were incarnated spirits being punished on hell. That's how Earth felt to me. And then when I went on the roof and was like, I want to see this reality in another way, only then was that concept, you know, that's this binary of heaven, even available to me. And once I finally kind of gave all that up and just said, fuck it, I'm doing my own thing, I'm going my own way, I don't care what anybody thinks about this. And ultimately, I call it that choosing a shamanic path, but it can be seen as, you know, choosing that spiritual path. That's for me when everything got better. My health reached places it had never been before. My wealth reached places it had never been before. My happiness, my peace. And when I see these little memes that say, like, going on this journey is this gut-wrenching, horrible thing, I disagree. That's not what it showed me. Being alive and not being someone who was aware and paying attention to this was more violent than actually being like, I'm going to become more aware and learn about things that might be uncomfortable, but they're going to equip me with the emotional capacity to be able to handle those things. And so now, whenever something intense happens, whether that's a wildfire or a pandemic, it actually doesn't feel as destabilizing as it did when I was younger, before I had the concept of what was going on around me energetically.
Yeah. The power of kind of feeling into our own essence, that true surrender to just go, this is who I am. I think that is the best gift that we can gift ourselves. and I say that in the human design space as well, in my little orbit of find mm-hmm. who you are, because when you feel who you are, when something hits against you, it's what you just said then, you're not knocked off your mm-hmm. rocker. You're grounded. You're good. You're like, yep, that's not me. My aunt passed away. I've had a lot of death this year, but my aunt passed away and I found myself getting really emotional. And suddenly in this moment, I'm like, that's not mine. That's every other person in this family. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, like a pen, I just dropped it and I'm like, good, thanks. And I'm like, wow.
Mm.
Anyway, that was a terrible analogy, but it's just like, we can just drop it. I love to just think that sometimes if I get caught in my head, just drop it.
Well, you know, grief can be a very heavy weight in the body. And I understand what you're saying, because for the manifestor experience, beneath a lot of our anger is grief. And that's really why we're so angry. And it is this heavy thing in the body that becomes septic. And so if you're telling me it's also available to just drop it, I think that's very inspiring, you know, because ultimately if the reflector is showing us that, there's something to learn there. It's not that we're not allowing ourselves to go into the emotions when they're hard and heavy, because that is very valuable, but we can get trapped there, or we can get pinned beneath that heaviness. And so if there are ways to release it, I think that's very important. But you are reminding me, you know, yes, we want to kind of choose ourselves, but this is why it's so important that your environment is filled with people you resonate with, and you have your community of people who, let's say, speak human design. I think that's essential, or support you in the ways that you need. Because when somebody speaks human design, the nature of your friendship just goes so much deeper, because they're seeing you differently, and then they're encouraging you to be yourself, rather than when sometimes we don't have this information available to us, we encourage you to be what we think you should be, like based on how we're perceiving you or what we think of ourselves. But when you have the study to kind of support your language, you're able to actually connect with the other more deeply. And so then you can surround yourself with people who I would say actually care more deeply about you as the individual, because they're understanding you more. So choosing yourself is important, but so is making sure the space and environment around you is mirroring what you want to be mirrored.
Yes, exactly. And especially in our families, which you would know, having your family around now, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to impact us in different ways, our little people, our children. Would you mind mm-hmm. sharing a little bit of your current family dynamic and how you process that with your energy?
I have a small family. I have one child, and we're a three-person family in my household. And I come from a three-person family, was once a four-person family. And my husband comes from a six-person family. And something that I do want to say, that when I went on my human design journey, really, and did that path, I did separate from family members. And I think this is something that I don't expect everybody to take their variable studies to such a degree that I do. Like, I'm very devoted to the environment study. My personal thesis is around understanding the way the space outside us, how we're in relationship to the space outside us, and how it contributes to our wellness or lack of wellness. I don't expect everybody to make radical, dramatic changes in those areas. But I suspect most of us need to, in order to be as well as we want to be, because a lot of us are imprisoned by our family members or the culture of our family. I actually see this a lot in the BIPOC community in a way that I don't see in the white community, that the family culture is very strong, let's say among Latinas, or I work with a lot of Chinese women or Vietnamese women, and the family culture is very strict, that there is not a lot of space for the individual. And so that has been very illuminating to me, because the family member and the responsibility of the family can sometimes be so oppressive to the individual. And our families, even though we love them and come from them, aren't always good for us. You know, we couldn't be more different or have different dynamics. And so I am of the mind, if anybody is not supportive of me, or, you know, not good for me, or I'm not good for them, I am of the thesis that we might make each other unwell. So I would rather put distance between us rather than force that relationship that might cause so much harm in the body that I'm not fully aware of, where things can grow inside me without me knowing. I do think a lot of our chronic illness is because of these set patterns we have with individual people that become like these poison arrows inside of us, you know? And so just because we have family members doesn't mean they're our family. My husband and I started our own family. And because I had such a close call with death, we were not going to have more kids. And in fact, from the treatment I have had, I was told that I would not have kids. I had chemo and radiation to my entire torso. So I was told I was infertile. So getting pregnant was a surprise for me. And I had to really kind of reshape my reality to realize, wow, I'm going to be a parent. But when we discovered two of our really close friends were struggling to have kids because they were a same-sex couple and they had all these hoops and legalities to jump through, we talked about it and offered to be sperm donor to them, knowing that we were going to have one kid. And I love this part of my story so much. Like, I love that we did this. My manifestor best friend from college married a generator woman. I married a generator man. The two of us put our partners together. These two manifestors initiated these two generators to carry out the creative labor workforce of making this human. And our friends gave birth to a daughter who is a manifestor with a totally open G center. And I was just like, I am obsessed with everything happening here. So we created our own family. And personally, I have my Chiron, my wound in life, in the sign of Cancer, which can be, you know, wounds at home that can be healed when you choose your own family. And so in a lot of my projects now, I try to feature the family, but also feature families that look different. You know, my husband is Métis, and so I also have a Métis child. So I try to do a lot of transparency around what it is to be a white parent with a child who has a culture that you didn't necessarily have growing up, but are immersed in now. But also I'm estranged from my dad's side of the family. And there were some things that happened on that side of the family that I didn't stand for and would not tolerate. And I did put distance between that because I'm not, you know, I don't care if we're related. If it goes against my values and the respect I think humanity should have, I will not stand for it. Don't care who you are, mm-hmm. you know? So a lot of people I see are like imprisoned by their family. And I try my best to just be like, you know what? I really got to just choose my own self, no matter how alienating the path is. And now that I have a little person watching me, keeping me accountable, looking at to me as an example that shapes their life, I really have to choose my heart.
I love that. I didn't get to parent my older two girls via Human Design or even share this with them, but my two little ones I can. And it's just such a permission slip for me to understand them, for them to also see me.
Oh yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
Environments with family, I can really relate to that. I was raised by my father's a reflector as well. And
a lot of
not self there. So it's he's passed. He passed earlier this year. A lot of death this year.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's okay. Thank you though. But he was someone who lived in his alignment, true to himself, but also took on so much. So you were talking about that body before, really, it's really kind of landed and gone, haha, here we go. Like, this is all making a lot more sense now. But in that space, with the work that you do, and it's something that studying under, like learning through you, in the environments and the variables, birth time, because I'm a birth doula. Like, I've helped deliver a lot of babies. Birth time, cool. And you know what? When I've sat here, and this is the beautiful gift that you gave me, is learning about the spectrum instead of just going, "Yes, you are this."
Yeah,
it was like I was able to go, "But what if I were this?" and really feel into it, and that's been fun. Can I say that? It's actually been really fun.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on birth time? Pardon?
How did that look for you? How did you experiment with that?
Well, I looked at, like, I just went through like every minute and watched how those things changed. And within 20 minutes, my variables changed. So I'm like, what if they got it wrong? Or like, what if my mum just went, oh yeah, it was 1:15 in the morning. But I know how that looks. And I've always sort of like looked when I'm in birth space of going, what is birth? Is it first breath? Is it when the head crowns, you know, or when the whole body is released? Is it when the umbilical cord's cut? What does C-section look like? Like, what are all these different spaces? And there's so much that can sort of overlap in the variable space and the layers when minutes matter, seconds sometimes. Yeah. So being able to experiment and go, well, maybe I'm this, you know, or maybe I'm not this, or maybe I'm that, like maybe I have a different digestion. So allowing myself to play with it and just go, what actually does Annie like? What feels good for me? And trying it on. And the more I did it and the more I muscle tested and stuff like that, I was just like, no, this is, because we can get caught in that too. When we see that chart and it comes up, we go, this is who I am.
Oh yeah, I see that a lot.
Yeah, without actually going, let's play with it. So
I really try to use the language of play, like really, really intentionally try to weave that in just so people don't take it so seriously, you know? And when it comes to the birth time, you know, statistically, 70% of the charts I've seen have rounded birth times. And so I would deduce that to being 70% of people round their birth time. And some people don't even know this, but to me, a rounded birth time is when the final decimal in your birth time is a 0 or a 5. So you're born at 1:15 or 3:30 or, you know, rather than 3:33 or 1:14 or things like that. And I remember watching Pamela Anderson's most recent kind of documentary on her life or something. And she was talking about the baby being born. And I don't remember the exact minutes that were said. Okay. But it was something along the lines of Tommy Lee going, oh, he's born at 3:25. And she's like, 3:23. You hear her say it. And I'm like, that is exactly how it happens. We just remember it as around approximately then. And that's what gets echoed. And then that's what gets translated. So unless it was like written down in that moment, you know, but you know, it brings up these interesting questions though. Like, was the clock in the birth room right? And you know what I mean? Just all these kinds of things. So when you're looking at the surface of the design, and the surface being the energy centers, you know, the definition really, and determining what your design type and authority is, you can have some wiggle room, honestly, but you want to get as precise as possible with your birth time as soon as you're looking at variable, because you're going beneath your gates, beneath your lines, and into the color, tone, and depth and base of your chart, so that you're all of a sudden looking at things that can really change minute to minute. And people don't realize the significance and importance that there might be a difference from being born at 1:15 and 1:14. And then people look at their birth time like, oh, well, my mom said I was 1:15. So, you know, it's 1:15. And then they don't resonate with something, or it sounds, ooh, I don't know. So I really like to encourage anyone, as soon as you get to this area, as soon as you get to variable in your human design studies, which if you stay long enough, like if you practice your strategy and authority, what your body is doing is aligning you to your most ideal environment. That's what's happening there when you're doing that. So naturally, as you keep doing that, you're going to learn about environment. It's going to call you into this deeper part of your study, which is how to nourish yourself with your determination, what surroundings you resonate with your environment, how you perceive the world around you through your perspective, and how you make sense of the reality you're seeing and become more aware through your motivation. Once you get to that part of the study, every single one of us should challenge our birth time. You know, we should calculate up a few minutes or down a few minutes, even if we have a very specific, precise birth time. Like, I am born at 3:33, but I will still, you know, when I'm experimenting in this, we'll definitely add plus or minus 10 minutes on either side and go 9 minutes, 8 minutes, just to see how the variable arrangement changes. Because what will happen is somebody gets their variable and they start experimenting it and they create these rules like, I'm cold thirst and I'm a valleys and I got to do this and I got to do that. And then I see their chart and I'm like, yeah, but three of your variable might change and your orientation might flip from right to left just within 1 minute. Are you still so confident of your design? And they never are. So I will often do some kind of birth chart analysis for people and birth time analysis and show them the options of what they might be. And a lot of people's core design doesn't change, but their depths do. And so my suggestion in those areas is to play with all of the information. So let's say not anything changes except your determination variable. Your cognition changes from outer vision to inner vision, and all of a sudden you're not left-brained, you're right-brained. Well, whoa, that would really change things for someone who's reading all about having a left brain and what they think that means. So I would then to that person say, learn all the information of outer vision and inner vision and see if you can spot it in yourself. And ultimately, you know, when the variable does change, I worked with a woman who her mom had passed away. She had a home birth. There's no way for her to know what the actual birth time is.
Yeah.
My guidance to her was no matter what, your environment variable doesn't change, even though your determination variable does. So really get playful with your environment experiments, because as you align your environment, you are naturally going to have things around you that you can ingest and eat. And you will see, like over time, as you get more and more aligned in your environment, you will naturally just start feeding yourself according to your design. Yeah. And then please come tell me what that is for you, you know, because I would like to know. Yeah.
I love this stuff that you're doing. I know we've been going for a long time and I don't want to keep you too much longer, even though we could just keep chatting. But share with us how, I don't know if you're taking on new clients, how can people work with you? How can they find you? Would you like to share?
Yes, I have a wellness club, which is on my personal website, vanessahenry.com. And what I do there is take people into the depths of their design in what I would feel a safe way, but a playful way. And my wellness club is a deconditioning site for human design lovers, where I share with you how to translate this depth that you have to you, but also the depths of the important people in your life. Because they're at this point, if you're looking at this stuff this deep in the design, the people around you, you're also ingesting their energy. And so it's your responsibility to learn about them too, because they're going to affect you. And so in the wellness club, I teach variable in a very kind of spacious way that pushes people beyond the binary. And in that space, I teach people how to actually experiment, how to actually trial and error things and track and measure things and have fun with this part of your design. Also in that space, when you are learning this about yourself, it can be really heavy and challenging sometimes. And it's important for that to be able to be moved through you. I am the left angle cross of healing. So for me, I do have a curiosity of being well and unwell, you know? And I often will find myself in environments where people aren't well because I'm kind of calling that in and I want to see something transform into wellness, you know? So I also have in there in the club a shamanic practice, which is this art of frequency healing through sound. And I take people on these deep cinematic frequency healing adventures using the shamanic arts in order to actually reset the conditioned frequencies that we have in us. So as you're learning about your depths, as you're experimenting with your diet, experimenting with your mindset, some challenging things come up. And now you need to actually release it from the form. So the Wellness Club became my personal little playground to really experiment. And I sort of invite people in to kind of take in my style with me. And I do invite reflectors in for free because I didn't like what I was seeing on how the reflector community was treated. And in my world, that's the design type we should be bowing to the most. So, you know, as a white person in a wellness space, I see a lot of people who will do scholarships to the BIPOC community or you know, things of that nature. And I do sometimes find it to be performative. And so I didn't want to do anything that was isolating race, but I thought, how might I play with this from an energetic perspective? And I wanted to offer reflectors to be able to get to join the club for free because I don't know that much about them. I have everything to learn from the reflector community. And I've been connected to such a big reflector community now that I just feel like I love to watch and learn. I just love to watch and learn and see what they're kind of doing and to see how the variable study impacts the reflector specifically, because it is a little bit different. You know, your experience is different from the rest of us. So I know nothing then in that sense, right? So why would I charge a reflector? That's how my perspective is. So that any type of scholarship or which that's not the language I use, but I do circulate it among the reflector community. So if you are a reflector and you're hearing this and you're curious about that, I do make that available to you through my own little means. And then in my wellness club, as somebody who is a hermit and is a 6'2", that's the only place you can work with me one-to-one. I do private mentorship, but it's only if you're in that space, because I'm at this point where I don't actually need to open myself up so widely to the public. It's not always safe for me. And anybody who is in my club, I have access to their body graph and their variable. So I can go deep with them right away, rather than have to get to know someone who hasn't invested in me yet, you know, who hasn't invested in my club. I kind of just don't do that anymore. You know, I'm at this point now where if you invest in me, I'll invest in you. And that feels very good for me. So I do a lot of things, I guess you could say for free. Like I have my show Each Other, which is with a generator, manifesting generator and projector to show the dynamics. I have my show On the Roof with my family, which is showing human design in action, where we kind of live our life as these funny characters. And I point out the energetics. And I've done a really beautiful docuseries called HDIRL, which follows 7 really cool people and shows their energetics playing out in real life. So I do like to make creative projects as sort of like a gift to the human design space. And then I go back and kind of do my private deep study, which is ultimately to understand how cancer grows in the body. Because that's my personal story. And I want to be as well as possible. So I had created the Wellness Club as a space for me to hang out in, find my own wellness, and surround myself with people who are also wanting to find their own wellness, so I could create some beautiful healing resonance for myself, to be honest, during my roof process.
Well, Vanessa, you are a true gift to the world. And from my heart to yours, and for any other reflector listening that has been privileged and to access the variable information, thank you so, so very much. It has been a huge for me to do it. And I think it's such a tool for us, because in a lot of human design space, we have anchors, but they're different to the other types. And when we can kind of take it to that depth, it's a depth to get to know us better. And the more I think that we do, but it feels sometimes like we have a bigger deconditioning journey than a lot of the other types. I know I'm saying that generally, but
that's fair. You're allowed to say that. Yeah.
But taking that inner journey, because a lot of reflectors are raised not knowing who the hell they are. So it's just been a gift, and a gift to many. And we value you and appreciate you so very much. And with your cross of healing, can you please take my head cold away?
You know what? Can I say a little quick comment? Thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Cross of healing, everybody expects someone to walk around like a healer. You know, it's so not what it is. But, you know, it's funny. I find the most healing thing I've learned, at least what people have shown me, is just by acknowledging them and seeing them. You don't need to go in and fix anything for anybody. You just got to echo it back and say, I hear you. And that ultimately can make people come totally undone sometimes, you know, and they can just fall apart when you're like, I'm here, or I'm with you, or I see you. They don't need you to come in and cure it. You know, they just need to be seen and validated in their experiences.
Incarnation crosses, aren't they? Another gift that keeps on giving. Mine's a distraction. Yeah. And doesn't that get flipped around the wrong way? Learning that it's a gift of mine to come in and kind of distract people off their negative self path and just go, have you thought about this?
I think that's beautiful. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for taking time to sit with me. I'm just so grateful that you are here and just sharing all your wisdom and love. Do you have anything else that you'd like to share with this little reflector community of ours?
I don't, but I want to just thank you for having me on and being so gracious with me in how I kind of got here and had this conversation with you, and for letting me kind of have a moment with the Reflector community, because I really do kind of bow to the Reflector community. From my perspective, you're the teachers, you know, and you're delivering teachings constantly, and I'm the student watching and deciphering your teachings. And I'm learning that not everybody sees you that way, but I want you to know that that's how I see you, and that's how I will continue to choose to see you. And I think you guys are actually the real treats and celebrities of the human design space.